Welcome to episode 45 of Extra Sequential. My name is Chris. I'm joined on the couch and the man in his trachydacks. Not the man in black, but a man in trachydacks.
That'll be me. My name's Mladen, and we're the podcast focusing on comics, graphic novels, and manga every week, every Saturday, because we love you. And this week we're going to focus on Green Lantern.
Yes.
Especially because it's been getting such great reviews, the latest film starring Ryan Reynolds and some other people.
Correct.
And in honor of that, and probably some sort of environmental awareness week, we're going to focus on green, Green Lantern.
I'm wearing my green shirt, but it's actually got Superman on it.
Did you know Green Lantern's one of the comic characters I know the least about?
Well, after today, you are going to... I had a present for you, but where did I put it?
Put it away.
It's in my pocket.
Like the creepy man in the past. I have a present for you. It's in my pants.
I've lost it. We'll get it later.
All right. And that'll follow on from the comic book news.
Where's my pants? Okay, I found them.
Are you drunk?
Okay, I found my... I was sitting on your present.
I don't know if I want it now.
Oh, it's been warmed to perfection, much like a Subway
sub. Oh, they're beautiful.
So, one for you and one for me. We don't have to wear them now. But,
Emerald Warrior and Join the Corpse. Core. I know. I can't choose.
So, if you go to your comic shop today, this week, you'll find that you might be able to get some Green Lantern badges.
Yes.
Pins. And there's also Green Lantern little bookmarky things, which have a rundown of which trade paperbacks you should be reading.
Okay.
And also you can get even Green Lantern door hanger things.
You're such a shill for these corporate...
I love freebies.
Yeah.
I get excited over free bits of cardboard and stuff with pictures on them.
Oh my God, it's a two-set badge. Thank you very much for your free gift.
Anytime. Spider-Man. He's getting a new series come November. It's going to be called Avenging Spider-Man, and it's going to be an ongoing series written by Zeb Wells with art by Joe Madureira. You'd be familiar with that guy, wouldn't you? Joe Mad. He was big in the X-Men in the 90s. Broke into Marvel when he was like 16, 17 kid. And then he kind of went away after the 90s and worked on video games such as Darksiders for a while,
Right. Which
came out, I think, late last year. So now he's back with Marvel. So, it's basically a big, fun superhero series starring Spider-Man, obviously, with his Avengers cohorts. This isn't the only Spider-Man titles. There's a whole plethora of them.
Of course.
So come November, Zeb Wells and Joe Madureira, that's actually quite a good combination called Avenging Spider-Man. Staying with Marvel.
Yeah, is this the X-Men thing we're talking about now?
Correct. X-Men Schism.
The breakup. What's happening?
Yep. It's a 5-issue miniseries which launches in July. After that finishes, Wolverine and the X-Men number 1 launches in October.
Mm.
And Uncanny X-Men relaunches in November, which is Uncanny X-Men is Marvel's longest-running title.
Yeah.
There's 550-something at the moment.
So it's like a Civil War thing within the X-Men?
Yeah, correct. It's Cyclops and Wolverine having fisticuffs because they're kind of ideological differences.
Yeah.
So, Wolverine's a bit of a, I don't like authority and I like to kill people, and Cyclops likes authority and likes to not kill people.
Yeah.
So they split up.
Yeah.
And, they've also loved the same woman, so there's that.
There is that. But was one a clone of the first one? See, it's okay because there's multiple Jean Greys running around, so surely there's enough Jean Grey to go around.
But maybe you just want the original and the best. Well, you can't because she's dead now, but anyway.
Well.
Let's talk about Russell Crowe. We mentioned in our last...
Do we have to? Do we really have to?
...episode okay. that he was originally approached to play Wolverine.
Right.
In the 2000 X-Men movie. Thankfully, he said no, but it looks like he's set to play Jor-El, who is Superman's Kryptonian daddy, as immortalized by Marlon Brando.
So this film is currently being... Film. Yeah, it seems to have a lot of stunt casting. Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner is his earthly father. Diane Lane is his earthly mother.
Yeah, she's not a huge star, I guess, but...
No.
But I guess maybe it's to make up for the fact that... I guess the Superman character, I can't even remember the actor's name now.
Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill, thank you. The guy from...
Tudors.
Tudors, yeah. He's good on that show. And Amy Adams is in this, too.
She plays Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Yes, so, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well,
he doesn't sense... I mean, I could sense like someone like Anthony Hopkins, but, with Russell Crowe, like that kind of gravitas.
Do you like Anthony Hopkins?
He's okay. He does play the same character as a lot of films. Yes, he has the same kind of speech patterns.
Yes.
But I could sense him as Jor-El.
I'm going to practice that and whip it out next week. Okay.
He does play the same characters all the time, doesn't he? Shall we stick with Superman news?
Let's do that.
I'm on my roll, aren't I? We discussed also a couple of weeks ago that DC are relaunching their entire Superhero line, 52 new number one issues starting in September.
Right.
All the solicitations are out now, so we know all the creative teams and the official descriptions of them all.
Sure.
Interviews with the creators are up online on like Comic Newsarama, Comic Resource and Newsarama, but they can't actually say anything.
Yeah, like I saw the interview of Grant Morrison. There's one online for about 2 minutes, him talking about the new Superman.
Yep.
And it was kind of a non-interview, didn't really say anything.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, it's kind of frustrating. So what can you tell us about nothing? Next question.
It's very exciting.
Is the costume be changed? I can't do it. Come September, we'll know it all. But basically, unfortunately, it looks like as part of the relaunch, reboot, Superman and Lois Lane, who have been married for 15 years, they got married on the Lois and Clark New Adventures Superman TV show, starring Dean Cain and Desperate Housewives Terry Hatcher.
Okay.
I don't pretend you don't know who I'm talking about. Yeah. At the same time as they did in the comics, getting divorced as part of this reboot. Probably. It's not definite. It's to make him fresh and young and appeal. And he'll hook up with Wonder Woman by the looks of things. They've had flings on occasion in alternate universes, but also in the real.
So they're trying to make a new... It was not a, it'd be a love quadrangle because there's Clark Kent, Superman, Lois, and now adding Wonder Woman... Superman, Clark Kent, Lois.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to... Spider-Man did this a couple of years ago, about 5 years ago, very controversial. It was called the One More Day and Brand New Day storyline, where basically Peter Parker made a deal with the devil, literally, in order to save his Aunt May's wife, life.
An amazing storyline, by the way.
You haven't read it? What are you talking about?
It sounds like a great idea.
What a sarcasm. The sarcasm meter is off the roof today. He made a deal with the devil to split up with his wife because the devil wanted their love, him and Mary Jane's love, so his wife. So basically he chose his dying aunt over his supermodel wife. You idiot. So we don't know if the same thing is going to happen with Superman and Lois. It's just going to be a new continuity or some kind of magical thing.
I'm guessing they want to play their will they won't they card again.
Yeah, that's possible.
Because now it's clearly will they won't they. So they've got to kind of somehow get romantic tension back in that comic. Maybe that's how. They should have made him cheat on Lois with Wonder Woman. Now, that would have made news headlines across the world.
Yes, but it's Superman, Aladdin. He's got to be an embodiment of an
paragon of boring. Virtue. He has to be a boring guy.
So what, people who stick with their wives are boring? better tell your girlfriend.
If we're talking soap operas, that's the boring guy. Who's like, oh, he never has any drama. He's never trying to take over the
But girls like safe men.
Yes,
don't
but
they?
these are superhero comics. These are drama on the page and punching.
But the bad guys can do all the bad stuff.
The bad guys can cheat on their wives.
Sure, that's what they're bad is. IDW launching IDW launching a Star Trek ongoing series in September, which actually follows the continuity set out in the 2009 film directed by J.J. Abrams. It's written by Mike Johnson with art by Stephen Molnar, and they'll both be working with the movie writer Roberto Orci, who also worked on the Transformers films. So that comes in September, so this will be some new ongoing tales set in the Star Trek movie universe.
Very cool.
Lastly for me, Holy Terror. Talk about him, Aladdin.
Do we have to? Okay, Frank Miller years ago announced that, hey, I'm going to... You know what comics aren't doing? They're not insulting the Middle East enough.
And so, punching people in the face.
Punching people in the face. There's not enough punching. And he planned for Batman to go over to the Middle East and inspire some holy terror by beating up some punks.
Basically it was Batman versus Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
That was the premise.
That was the working title of this, this premise.
It was called Holy Terror.
And surprise, surprise, he was told he couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I know, right? So he made his own comic called Holy Terror with a generic superhero guy.
Yeah, it's called The Fixer. So he's like a mercenary. Mm-hmm. And the cover's been released. It's going to be released in September by Legendary Comics, which is the new comic imprint of Legendary Pictures, which have done like Watchmen and 300 and quite a few DC films. Mm. So that comes out by, written and drawn by the one and the only Frank Miller.
Is there colouring by Lynn Varley?
His wife, right?
Ex-wife, I don't know what's going on.
Quite possibly.
Yeah, there's I was reading an interview with another comic book artist from the 80s. I can't remember his name, but there was a love triangle thing going on back then. Frank Miller kind of stole this guy's girlfriend. Wow. I'll have to talk about it next week. We should dedicate a whole show to this romantic triangle. It's more interesting to me, maybe, than others.
Before we talk about American Gods, just want to mention Supernova.
Sure.
He is on June 24 to 25 here at Perth at the Claremont Showground. It's been in the local newspaper, because we only have one, mm-hmm. the West Australian. So, Draco Malfoy himself is coming down. He's been voted the best on-screen villain for the last 3 years or something.
They're just being nice to him.
Surely that can't be.
I think they're just trying to throw him a bone.
Badder boys on the big screen than him. Anyway, so the Supernova... .com.au to check out the guests.
Speaking of cons, the New York Times created an article about how movie studios are reassessing how much money they'll spend and time at Comic-Con in the US. Now, for the last few years, we've known that the American cons have been overrun by films, a lot of which have nothing to do with comics.
Yep. Like Twilight!
Or Angelina Jolie's Salt, for some reason, has a heavy presence at the cons. And Warner Brothers, Disney and DreamWorks aren't bringing films to the show this year, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And even Marvel's trying to decide whether to do like a big panel, because they had like the Avengers panel, I think, last year.
You're right, yes.
So I think this is great news.
I think it's good, I guess, because they're looking at films that did really well, like your 300 or your Watchmen or your Kick-Ass, did really well at Comic-Con. And then when they premiered there, and then when they're unleashed on an unsuspecting populace, didn't do so well.
Scott Pilgrim's an example of that as well.
Yes, good point. Yeah. So they're thinking, why bother? I mean, they'll still have some films there. I guess they'll just have a booth promoting something, but they won't be premiering their films and get all the cast and all that kind of stuff.
It'd be nice for a Comic-Con to have a focus more on comics.
I think. And a lot of people have been complaining.
Really?
Proclaiming
comic fans
complaints.
Complaining about something?
About that, the movies have hijacked Comic-Con. Right. So I think most people, and you probably even find attendance will drop because there's not a chance that they'll see Johnny Depp or whatever.
So you won't have to upgrade to the Sky Dome at Houston, Texas, or wherever the hell they were planning to move it?
Maybe actually, because the lease runs out at the San Diego Convention Center, so I don't know if they might just stay there.
I made that up. I don't know if there's a Sky Dome in Houston, Texas.
There's a Space Needle in Seattle, isn't there?
Line the convention up vertically, you mean?
Abseil down.
In other comic news, and this is the last piece we'll report on, Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman's obviously the writer of Sandman and many, many other comics.
Obviously.
Well, it's obvious to me, okay? Fine, all right. His novel, American Gods, is being adapted by HBO, the TV station that brought us Carnivale, currently Game of Thrones, Sopranos, a million awesome shows. And
I thought you didn't like Game of Thrones.
I don't.
You just called it awesome.
I wasn't including Game of Thrones in that. They have a million shows and one bad show that I don't like. Hate mail me, everyone, at Chris at sequential.com. It's being produced by Tom Hanks' production studio, Playtone Productions, which doesn't necessarily mean he'll be in it. It usually doesn't.
Yeah.
They've planned for 6 seasons, which I think shows a huge sense of confidence.
Yes.
Perhaps misplaced. That's unconfirmed anyway, but it's going to cost $35 to $40 million per season, and that's a per episode cost of $3.5 to $4 million. You compare that to Boardwalk Empire, which costs around $50 million per season, you get the sense that it's a reasonably pricey show.
And what's America Gods is the embodiment of gods living in Earth or something? Is that what it's about?
Yeah, especially the Norse gods at the beginning, because it kind of follows Thor around again.
Cool.
I think he's called Mr. Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're kind of clever how they integrate it, and they don't really know what they are. They're kind of embodiment, so it's very kind of a Terry Pratchett thing to do.
Okay.
So, yeah. But that'll be one to watch in the coming years, hopefully. Mm. Let's get on to Green Lantern. We'd like to warn you that what you're about to hear may offend and disturb some listeners. Which one do you want to be?
I guess I'll be Hal, because I always used to be him.
What? Really? You are wearing green today.
When I was, as a kid, I'd always pretend I was him.
Well, let's just do the scene.
It's not going to be easy, honey.
We can do it, though. We're Green Lanterns. It'll take a while for them to stop thinking of me as a girl, but they will. I just have to show them that I'm the same Arissa they knew, but only better.
And I have to show them that I'm not a child molester.
Don't be ridiculous. Everybody knows you're too good for that, and they all know how hard you fought me off when I was a child. But now I'm a woman, and you're a man, and that's the story.
Like Kilowog said, you mean, forget the technicalities, and just go by what everybody knows.
Sure, and everyone knows love. To catch a predator. That scene is an infamous scene from the many thousands of Green Lantern comics. In this one, Hal succumbs to the sexy wiles of a 13-year-old Green Lantern Corps member who makes herself grow into an adult over the course of a couple of comics, but she's still a child.
Well, I think, I don't know if she was like 13 in Alien Years, but she wasn't. I mean, she doesn't look 13 in...
She definitely looked like a child in the issues just before this.
Okay.
So his defense is she didn't look under 18, man. I swear, I didn't know.
Who's that Great Balls of Fire guy that married his 14-year-old cousin? Jerry Lee Lewis, was that him?
Yeah, classy guy.
But, just, you know, when you're dealing with aliens far away from your home planet, strange things happen. All right, anyway.
Okay.
I tried to defend Hal Jordan. So we are talking about Green Lantern. As you know, the film opened this week to mediocre reviews. Unfortunately, we don't get it here in Australia for another, 5 weeks almost.
Mm, and because we love our fellow Australian listeners who don't get to see this film for a while, we thought we'd give you a primer and maybe something to tide you down until the film gets released here.
Correct. And if you have seen the film, please make a comment on our Facebook page, Extra Sequential Podcast, or just email myself, Chris, with a K, at extrasequential.com.
Do that.
We're keen. I mean, I'll definitely see it. I know you probably won't.
Yeah, I'm done.
So we're going to try and give a brief rundown of what the concept of Green Lantern is, some books, comics you should be reading, and just some of the most famous and favourite characters in the mythos.
Yeah. And if you're like me, I knew really nothing about Green Lantern before this show, and I read a few comics before this, and I guess he's got his own thing going on, and we'll get into that.
Yeah, I've been reading Green Lantern for years and years, since I was probably about 15, I guess, so I didn't actually have to do that much research, and my memory...
just came to you.
It did. Sometimes you can whip these information out, like gold nuggets in your pocket.
I know that feeling.
High five. Ow. You hurt me. Your man hands. Green Lantern is actually the name of a multitude of characters within the DC Comics universe, not just one.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the Green Lantern is kind of, they're basically space cops, they're patrolmen. There's two Green Lanterns per sector, and there's 3,600 sectors in our universe. So in total, there's 7,200 lanterns, Green Lanterns.
That's a lot of nuts.
And so they're kind of how I like to explain them is they're like Jedis because they're peacekeeping force.
Right.
They're scattered throughout the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Force, yep, got it.
They all wear similar costumes.
Yeah.
And they all have cool weapons.
Right.
But instead of lightsabers, the Green Lanterns have their
green power rings.
Green Fist of Fury. And they all tap into, instead of tapping into the Force, they kind of tap into the willpower.
Okay.
Which is basically what their Green Lantern ring charges off. So if you can imagine something, your ring will create it for you. So that means...
So it's like a grant's wishes, is that it?
kind of. It's like a Swiss Army knife, and it creates harder light constructs. So you can make shovels or fists or lasers. You can fly through space.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks to you, so it interprets different alien languages, that sort of stuff. It's very handy to have, Melaton. You should get one.
I will.
Earth is Sector 2814. So that's the sector we're in, just in case you wanted to know.
Right.
And after a Green Lantern member dies, their ring will fly off the hand and return to Oa, which is the home planet, where they all get trained and stuff.
Right,
like their precinct, and it'll find the closest worthy successor.
Hmm, okay.
And that's how Hal Jordan got his ring.
Mm-hmm.
But Hal Jordan wasn't the first. Do you know who was?
Alan Scott.
Did you know that before this show?
I did not. In the 1940s, there was a Green Lantern comic, which... Yes. It has only sort of loose similarities to the Green Lantern as we know it today. He was a young railway engineer and discovered a magical green flame in a lantern.
Yep.
And the lanterns were tied to the kind of railway working thing anyway, because they used them in tunnels and so forth. So he used that to fight crime, And then he got cancelled.
He did, nevertheless.
And his powers wouldn't work on wood.
Correct. Now, there's an interesting explanation for this because in the...
Railway engineers hate wood, I hear.
Splinters, no!
Green Lantern, there's a forest fire.
Call the fire brigade. We know Marvel's heroes, they all had weaknesses like insecurities and that kind of
right.
thing. Whereas DC's weakness, every hero needs a weakness. So they just create weaknesses. Superman's was kryptonite. Alan Scott, the first Green Lantern, his weakness was wood. So his ring wouldn't work against wood. And then eventually, Wonder Woman couldn't get tied up and she'd lose her powers. Aquaman couldn't live out of water for more than an hour. Mm. They throw these things to make the story more interesting.
Batman's weakness is flashbacks.
Or gunshots.
He ends up lying on the floor, quivering.
Getting paralysed. you're right. Alan Scott was the first one, but he wasn't a member of the Green Lantern Corps. That concept came about 20 years after he was created, but he still had the same name. In the Silver Age, which we like to call the late 50s, I think...
The other way is the sentence that should have gone.
Silver... What?
Don't worry.
So the Silver Age is the age from comics from about 1959 onwards. DC kind of reinvented a lot of the heroes and gave them more of a sci-fi edge.
Yes.
With the atom bomb. So you had Green Lantern was one of the first characters to get reinvented.
Mm.
And that's when Hal Jordan came along in the late 50s and the Space Patrolman and all that came around. The Atom, the Hawkman, the Flash, all these characters are reinvented.
And Hal Jordan's Ryan Reynolds' character?
Hal Jordan is Ryan Reynolds' character.
So he's like an Air Force pilot, is that
he's
right?
Hotshot, cocky test pilot. Hal Highball Jordan, his father was also a test pilot who died on the job, and he's the greatest of the Green Lanterns. We should maybe backtrack a bit. The Guardians of the Universe actually created the Green Lantern Corps. They're the
little blue guys, aren't they?
They're kind of like if Yoda had sex with a Smurf. Had a sex with Smurfette.
You mean if?
There's another Smurfette, the Sasset. Did you know that?
Is she the temptress?
I guess so. So there's two female Smurfs.
She was made by Gargamel to tempt them.
Oh,
so
really?
Did he have another go and go, second time's a charm?
Well, I don't think he made Smurfette, did he?
I think he did.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she was a spell that he made. They used to just be dudes.
Oh, okay.
I think they're asexual and maybe they split in two to make new Smurfs.
Why doesn't he make a woman for himself? Doesn't he have a cat and that's it?
Gargamel's so bored,
He lives in a swamp or something?
Get an iPod or something, guy. Find something else to do.
I didn't think we'd be talking about Smurfs. So they're the oldest beings in the universe, these Guardians of the Universe. They've been around for billions of years, and they basically enact law and order across the universe. They created the central power battery, which is like the huge lantern that all the other individual power rings recharge from on the home planet of Oa. And basically, they're emotionless. They're kind of like Spock. They don't like emotion. They think emotion is the end of the universe.
Right.
So they created these robotic manhunters. There's actually a game out now.
Are they different to Martian Manhunters?
They are. Okay. There's a game out now called Green Lantern Rise of the Manhunters, and they're like big, hulking, red, blue robots. So they were kind of their practice Green Lanterns, but then they went all nuts and killed like a whole sector of the galaxy or something.
Ooh.
So then said, I'll scrap that. Let's give them to actual sentient beings.
Playing fast and loose with the law here, Owens, aren't you?
They're like Steven Seagal.
They're out for a kill.
Sinestro, until Hal Jordan came along, he was the best of the Green Lanterns. He's the purple guy.
Purple guy with the shifty-looking mustache.
And the pencil-thin mustache.
Yeah.
So he became Hal Jordan's mentor of sorts after Abin Sur, who's the purple alien who died.
Yes.
Gave his ring to Hal Jordan. So Sinestro and Hal are kind of buddies. It's the kind of thing you see in Star Wars as well. Sinestro is kind of like Anakin Skywalker type character.
Got you. And that makes Hal Obi-Wan the more boring one?
You could say that.
Yeah.
But he always gets the job done, even though he doesn't like authority, and he was the first human to be inducted into the Green Lantern Corps, so all these islands are going, what?
Yeah.
Who's this pasty, fleshy, weak human? What do they do? They just cause wars and stuff.
Bunch of racists is all I have to say. Green Lantern Corps, my ass.
Correct. And all throughout this thing, there's this prophecy of the Blackest Night, which will...
Yeah.
Probably won't get into it later. But basically, we come up to an interesting period in Hal's life in the mid-90s.
Oh, that far ahead. Okay.
I'm just realizing how long it's taking me to tell all this stuff.
Yeah.
But basically, in the mid-90s, DC killed Superman.
As they
and
did, yeah.
Broke Batman's back, which may actually be happening in the new film, Dark Knight Rises, if that's the rumour to be believed. So DC said, okay, cool, we're turning all our good guys bad and killing them, so Hal Jordan's next. So what they did was the cyborg Superman, who was an evil version of Superman, destroyed his coast city, basically blew it up, and all the millions of inhabitants. Hal Jordan went mad. He killed all the other Green Lanterns, stole their power rings.
Did he kill Kilowog?
I think he killed pretty much all of them.
How, did they come back? Did he re?
They all came back.
Of course.
Kyle Rayner, when he got the powers of a god, Kyle Rayner gave them all back. So this is Green Lantern 48 to 50, which is when I first started really getting into Green Lantern comics. That was in the Emerald Twilight. So when I came into comics, I was reading Kyle Rayner, who was Hal Jordan's replacement. Hal Jordan became Parallax, went nuts, and eventually sacrificed his life from this planet galactic-y eating thing called the Sun Eater. So he basically said, I'll go and kill this thing and kill myself because I killed a whole city full of people and I shouldn't have done that. I'm bad.
Right.
I'll kill myself and then you'll love me again and give me a proper hero's funeral. So that's what happened. And Kyle Rayner replaced him, who you probably be familiar with.
I'm familiar with Kyle Rayner, but it seems like we've skipped some lanterns here.
We have skipped lanterns. We skipped Guy Gardner and John Stewart.
I'd like to talk about those guys as well. I mean, I mean, Hal Jordan's a bit like Major Nelson from I Dream of Jeannie, in that he's a test pilot. He finds this magical item, and it brings him some hilarious adventures. And
sure, let's go with that analogy.
All right. And as you mentioned, the closest person who is without fear, which they then change later, but that was the idea, gets the ring. But who, pray tell, was the second closest? Why, that would be Guy Gardner.
Yeah, Guy Gardner was the second closest. So he was basically, I think...
He was also a pilot, wasn't he?
No, I don't think so. He was going to his dad's funeral or something, so he didn't make it there in time. But yeah, Hal Jordan was the closest to Avenger's death.
And he's the guy with like this weird red bowl cut.
Yeah, you don't see many red-headed heroes. The only other thing I could think of was Ron Weasley.
Oh, out of men. Yeah, that's true.
Batgirl, yeah, that's true.
Rorschach.
Oh, yeah.
Spoilers for Watchmen. Oh, whoops. You're not supposed to know that. Rewind. Yeah, and he was kind of like started off being fairly normal, and then in the kind of 80s, they turned him into this ultra-crude, militant kind of guy who wears leather jackets and like a punk.
He was like the bad boy that everybody loves to hate. So he was a real hothead, and he always thought that he should have been the first Green Lantern. He eventually did get his own ring because I think Green Lantern, Hal Jordan got injured or something.
Right.
So Guy Gardner eventually did get his own ring. He's the one that Jack Black was going to play in the film.
Oh,
years ago, so he's got this red-headed bowl haircut, and as you said, in the 80s, he was in the Justice League International series, which was awesome, and everyone.
And this is
read.
Him with his own separate ring.
Very
at
funny.
This point.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yep. So Guy Gardner was the Green Lantern for a few years, and you might remember the classic scene where Batman punches him, where him and
Someone ask on the on the Extra Sequential Facebook, has Batman ever beaten him up? And yes, he knocked him out with one punch.
And that became quite a classic in that series. Yeah. Eventually, as happens, Guy Gardner got hit by a bus, literally.
Yeah,
he's trying to save some children or something. Guy Gardner got hit by a bus.
Yeah.
So, do you know who replaced Guy Gardner?
That would be Jon Stewart, the host of The Daily Show.
You get a scratch statistic. And no, that's J-I-N, I think. This is J-I-H-N.
Got you. So, Jon Stewart, that's probably more familiar to people if you've seen, the Justice League cartoon?
Yeah, he was, Jon Stewart's an interesting character. He was one of the first African-American characters that DC did. I think he debuted in early 72. Created by Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams. And he was an architect, much like yourself, Maladin.
Yeah, veteran Marine.
And a former Marine, much like
myself. And one of those things.
And, he was the replacement to the replacement. Mm-hmm. And, he was in the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited cartoon series, which ran from 2001 to 2006.
Right.
So when the trailers for this film, a lot of African-Americans go, what?
Don't do the voice, Chris. Don't do the voice. Don't do the voice.
No, I wasn't going to.
No.
But they're like, how could you kick out the black Green Lantern and replace him with the white.
No,
that's what they were thinking, because I guess that's all that they thought was the only Green Lantern at the time. But that's not true. Hal Jordan is the most famous. Well, maybe not the most. Well, he will be now.
Well, he's been in the most comics anyway.
He's been the Green Lantern for the longest time. He's been around since 1959.
If you're going to do an origin story of his character, that would be...
Yeah, Hal Jordan is central to the whole film. John Stewart actually does appear in the film. There's a bar fight, because he's a Marine. There's a bar fight, apparently, between Ryan Reynolds and him in a bar, Air Force versus Marines.
If this film was actually good and the sequels are going to be good, it would be amazing if in each film they changed the lantern. So the next one was all about Guy Gardner and starring Jack Black. And the next one was John Stewart starring, I don't know, Idris Elba. He's really good.
True.
Yeah,
I'd imagine he would be in a sequel of some sorts, because it's kind of like what they did with Iron Man.
Yes. Where they changed the actor, Terrence Howard, transmorphed. Anyway.
So, John Stewart, he's had issues. He's killed a planet twice.
The same planet?
He killed a planet, I think, called Xanthi.
We finally rebuilt our planet. Oh, no.
Yeah, and that was, I think he had to do it. And then last month, he actually killed Mogo. He had to kill Mogo. Mogo is the planet-wide, well, it's a planet that Alamor created.
Right.
And we'll talk about the weird Green Lanterns later.
Yes.
But Mogo, M-O-G-O, is a planet. So he doesn't have a ring as such, but he's cut all the foliage on his own planet to form like the Green Lantern symbol.
That's one of the cool things about the Green Lantern comics. They're very cosmic.
They can be very inclusive. They can be anything.
Yeah, like in a couple of ones I read, there was a giant space stingray Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And there's clouds of nebulous smoke Green Lanterns.
Correct, yes.
And more, we'll get into more later. But following on from John Stewart, in 1994 we got Kyle Rayner, which some people refer to as like the poochification of...
Yes, Poochie was the, from the Simpsons episode where they tried to call it the cool backwards hat-wearing skateboard dog into the Simpsons, itching and scratchy.
Yeah, yeah.
To appeal to the kids. And Kyle Rayner was kind of that. A lot of, during the DC, a lot of this was happening a lot. You know, there was Superboy, who was the clone.
Right.
Then, you know, when you, John Paul Valley, Azrael became Batman.
Yes.
So a lot of replacement. Green Arrow got replaced.
He had a blacker outfit.
He had a blacker outfit.
And he's like an artist.
He's an artist.
Yeah.
Ganthet, who's one of the very few... He's kind of the rebel of the Guardians of the Universe, because usually they don't have names, but he gave himself a name, and he's kind of the one that helps the humans more.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of the outcast. He, after Hal Jordan killed most of the, or all of the Green Lantern Corps and destroyed the battery, there was one ring left. So Ganthet came to Earth and gave it to Kyle Rayner.
Right.
And Kyle Rayner was stumbling out of a nightclub, and he meets him in an alley.
Such a cool guy. He's just like you, everybody.
He gets this ring, and then he puts on a suit and gets a six-pack. Basically... And then, do you know what probably the most controversial thing that happened?
I'm pretty sure I do. His comic is now infamous for introducing women in refrigerators.
Yes.
That is the trend in comics to kill off a female character to forward the male character's plot lines. And that's understandably not the most...
correct.
Well, Kyle Rayner, he was a successful photographer, I think. And
artist.
Artist? Oh, okay. Oh, no, sorry, his girlfriend was a successful photographer. My notes, they're everywhere. And her name's like Alexandra DeWitt.
Yep,
Alex. Like the villain in Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Oh, okay.
She was kind of like his Alfred. She would give him sound advice and level-headed reason when he was being emotional and not seeing things clearly. And that they couldn't do with a female character in a superhero comic. So Major Force, who's some lame Captain Atom villain, kills her and stuffs her into a fridge.
Correct.
And this generates angst. So I'm glad she could be recycled into angst for Kyle Rayner. Am I...
That's pretty much it, yeah. And it's pretty gruesome. I still remember the actual page. He basically opens the fridge just a crack, and you kind of see, some of her hand and her head sticking out of the fridge.
And what does he say? He goes, "Oh, my God!"
Does he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Like Control 2, that's what that is.
And then he basically went out on a rampage and almost killed Major Force by creating an electric chair. I think Guy Gardner stopped him from killing him. And then he became this godlike being called Ion, I-O-N.
Yes.
For a while, because Hal Jordan is still dead at this stage. Kyle Rayner was the only Green Lantern, so he had his own series for quite a few years. So he became this ion entity inhabited him. He got a new costume. He basically became like a god. So he was still green and stuff, but he had all these powers and existed in multiple times at the same time. So what he did was he created a new central power battery on Oa, and he basically brought the core back to life. So if it wasn't for Kyle Rayner, there would be no core today. So he said, I'm lonely, I'm going to bring the Smurfs back.
He
created them all. And he's still around, he's still a Green Lantern, and he'll be leading a new multicoloured team in one of the new series come September, but we'll talk about those again later as well.
Well, you mentioned the multicolour thing, and maybe we could just mention what that is now, because I'm sure some of you have seen. What's the deal with him hating yellow? Because Green Lantern powers don't work on yellow.
Yeah, basically, as we said, they had strange weaknesses, and they didn't work in yellow. And basically, the man who's been most important to this whole Green Lantern mythos of the last 5-6 years is Geoff Johns, writer Geoff Johns, who used to work in Hollywood and has been writing comics primarily for DC ever since. And he had quite a lot to do with this film, even though not the script. But basically, he, in a miniseries called Green Lantern Rebirth, he brought Hal Jordan back. So, and he created, slowly but surely, that was his first work on Green Lantern. Ever since then, he's created what you said, the emotional spectrum.
Right.
So there's not any Green Lanterns now. Mm. The last couple of years we've seen blue and red and indigo and violet, and they all stand for different things.
Yeah, I've got a list here. Like, yellow was already around. Sinestro had made himself a yellow ring. Yellow's powered by fear.
Yes.
That's why the Green Lanterns, which are, I guess what, I forget what that is.
Nobility. Willpower.
Willpower, yeah. It's like the most stable one, and the other spectrum split off that, so warmer colours are evil, colder colours are good.
Yep.
So violet is the colour of love, and that's the Star Sapphire Corps, which is run by Hal's ex-girlfriend turned supervillain turned superhero.
Correct. Blake Lively. I don't think she'll become Star Sapphire in this film.
Oh, really? Sequel, but okay.
Yep.
Blue is colour of hope, so it's only like the purest souls. They're like the... they're like the Yodas, really. They're the guys who don't do much fighting, and they're there to heal. And
the medics, yeah.
Prior to the Star Wars prequel films, I should say, the Yoda of the original technology. The fighting in that. And they affect other lantern colours and so forth. So green is in the middle. That's the most stable. Then you get to yellow, which is fear, as we know. Orange is avarice, and there's only one dude I've been able to find.
Laughleys, yes. There isn't an orange core as such, but, orange greed. So he's Laughleys, who's this, like, greedy character, and he's the only one who has a ring.
He's like a billion-year-old thief, from what I understand, and he steals identities.
And Lex Luthor stole his ring for a while.
Nice. And red is rage, and they're the mindless killers. They're the kind of the spawns of the...
Yeah, they're pretty gross. Once you get infected by the red ring, if you have enough rage within you, you basically transform from the inside out. So you'll vomit blood, like acid blood. And you can't make constructs and stuff, I believe, but you can shoot red flames. Guy Gardner... because he's an angry hothead. He was possessed by Red Lantern at one stage.
OMG.
Yep.
Yeah.
And once you do, they all have their own different costumes. They all have their own different oaths as well. We know the Green Lantern, Brightest Day and Blackest Night, blah, blah. And all the other different colours have their own oath. So yellow one is about, stamping out and whatever.
And there's also black and white. And black's colour of death.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, black. I mentioned the Blackest Night earlier. Basically... think of black lanterns as zombies. There's not black lanterns. There's not a black lantern core, but there was a few black rings, and basically they'd go on to
anyone who's died. Basically.
Yeah, anyone who's died, and they can reanimate them.
Yeah.
And white is basically the first one, the ultimate. And there's not a white lantern core either, but it's just
that
one
would be
only.
Racist. All right.
So, there's a whole bunch of different emotional spectrums. I don't imagine the film would get into that, but I think that you do, and they all have different symbols.
Right.
Then we know the Green Lantern symbol by now. It's pretty simple. It's just two horizontal lines with a circle between it. The other lanterns, lantern cores, are all slightly different from that, but they've all got the circle.
All little
kind
graphic
of thing.
Design things. Kind of cool.
It's an interesting time to actually be a Green Lantern fan. Shall we mention some of the weirdo
ones? As we mentioned, anything can be a Green Lantern,
It's kind of like in, is it Star Wars, what's the episode 2, Attack of the Clones, where there's all those Jedis kind of fighting in that arena?
Yeah, except they all look like human dudes but with different heads.
I suppose they do.
And Green Lantern, they go a bit further with this.
They do. They go very far. So we know Kilowog, who's the big burly guy, he's an alien. Most of the Green Lantern Corps is alien. We've mentioned the humans, but there's few and far between.
Right.
Kilowog is the trainer, so he calls everyone Pooza. Mm-hmm. It's like his insult. Tomar Ray, voiced by Jeffrey Rush in the film. He's like the one of the leader type people.
Yeah.
Salak, who's like the four-limbed. I think he's like, I don't know what he is.
Who's the fish face guy?
Good question.
It's like a bird fish face. He's a tall, skinny dude. That might be the Jeffrey Rush character. I think that's
Tomar Ray with the beak.
Yeah, he's got a beak. He looks like a fish beak.
There's Chip, C-H-apostrophe-ep.
Yes.
Ep, P. Yeah.
Star Wars naming conventions.
Yes. Throw an apostrophe, there's not enough. I'm running out. He's like a squirrel chipmunk character. I actually just watched Green Lantern First Flight, which is the animated film that came out last night, and on one of the special came out last year, but I watched it last night, and it's got Chip in there, in the Duck Dodgers. There's a Duck Dodgers cartoon, the bonus feature, because Daffy Duck gets Howard's power ring and costume in his dry cleaning.
Wow.
He puts it on. And
was this like one of the original Looney Tunes cartoons?
It's like 2005 or something.
Oh, so it's a new one. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
It's quite funny, actually.
Chip's
in that and his talks and stuff.
Chip's cool. Our friend Jenny from the Extra Sequential Facebook page.
Yes.
She suggested we talk about him, and I love this little guy. He gets more and more cartoonish after his introduction. I think it was in the 70s or 80s when they were trying to make I think just after Denny O'Neill's work on the title.
Yep.
And his arch enemy is Ubex, or I don't know how to pronounce it, Ubix. It's UB apostrophe X. So more apostrophes. And he's his arch enemy, and he's like an evil scientist squirrel.
Cool.
And he's an alien from the planet Havlin again.
Yes.
An apostrophe, H apostrophe LVN, in sector 1014. And Chris probably know which sector that is and shares it with him. Oh, he's an expert.
No, I don't. But Chip is one of those characters like Nort, and G-N-O-R-T, who's kind of comedic relief, but he's cute and a lot of the fans love him.
A bit like Howard the Duck almost, or is he more aware?
But I think he wears pants. Why does Howard the Duck wear pants? I don't know. Nort is like a humanoid dog. He's kind of got comic relief. So he's big shaggy dog. He was in the Justice League International, and he also appeared in Justice League Antarctica.
Right.
Which is a spin-off series. And there's a few, we mentioned Mogo. There's Bizd, a couple of Z's and a D, who's like a fly thing. I think he's Mogo's partner.
Right. Is this the planet, Mogo?
Yeah.
So the planet's Mogo's partner is a tiny fly. That's really cool.
Yeah, I guess he pollinates things and whatnot.
And there's entire Green Lantern comics where there's no human characters, just focusing on aliens.
Yeah, I was reading actually this morning I was reading the DC Universe, the stories of Alan Moore.
Right.
So it's got three different short stories from Tales of the Green Lantern Corps, which is an anthology series from a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it introduces there's this weird one, which is this female character, I think that's Sorek Natu, she is tasked with going to a planet because it doesn't have a Green Lantern representative there. So she goes there, but it's all dark. Mm. There's no light in this entire universe.
Right.
So she finds this creature, but he doesn't understand the concept of light. And when she tries to understand the Green Lantern Corps, because he doesn't have light or colour, because he's blind, he only uses sound, the ring can't translate it in his language because there's no exists. This is written by Alan Moore, so it's pretty trippy, but it's pretty cool. So basically she works her way around it, and she gives him a green bell instead of a power ring.
Oh, cool.
And a costume with a bell on it instead of a... So essentially...
That's kind
of
nice.
That's our Rot Lop fan. So he's actually a member of the F-sharp Bell Corps who... Oh. And this is awesome. You'll never hear an oath like this. In loudest din or hush profound, my ears catch evil's slightest sound. Let those who toll out evil's knell beware my power, the F-sharp bell.
I love that.
So that's Green Lantern is very inclusive. And then there's, as you said, there's like mathematical formula ones, and then there's ones which are just like spores and pollen.
Mm.
There's all manner of craziness.
The only other one I had that I was really wanting to mention is E.T. the Starfish, and that's an alien entity which lived on Hal's shoulder from an alien race that he saves. And at one point, it climbs into the ring when Hal is knocked unconscious and saves the day. So, Starfish with a little ring. But E.T. then dies and turns into this form, like a metamorphosis that gets hooked on calcium. And so it's like all of the junkie sidekicks in a way.
Yes.
He gets hooked on calcium and turns bad, man. Turns into a bad seed.
Talking about junkie sidekicks, Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams had a great run on Green Lantern, Green Arrow in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great run, actually. It's not integral to reading of the character, but sure. It's kind of, it's very street level. It's called Hard Traveling Heroes is kind of the name that's usually applied to it. And that's when they fight corrupt politicians and racists. That's when Speedy, the hero, is on drugs. Mm-hmm. So they don't fight aliens or that kind of stuff. But it was a terrible time for the character because Green Arrow is quite a bit of a hothead and quite a liberal for the people, whereas Green Lantern was like, you know, quite staid and stuff at that stage in his life.
Well, I liked the Denny O'Neil's comics. These are the ones I read in prep. One's from 75 and one's from 1980. And the one from 75 is called Those Who Worship Evil's Might. Denny O'Neil, Mike Grell does the art. And it's a very unusual one, but it's a Green Lantern, Green Arrow team up. They're having a drink in the desert next to an abandoned, crashed alien spaceship, as you do. It suddenly comes to life and they come to the aid of this alien guy who's being attacked by pursuers. But little do they know, they've just helped the villain. So they travel to Callisto, one of the moons of Jupiter. You're getting the sense of the cosmic adventure here. And the alien lures Hal into a cave of a maze of solid gold and then binds him with like a yellow rope and steals the lantern. So he manages to escape, but he can't untie the rope, so he's flying through space tied up, which is really, really quite funny. And then at the end, the pair, the greenies, they actually literally voice out the moral of the story. They say, "What was the moral of our adventure, my friend?" kind of thing. So, and there's an obvious cameo from a Vulcan who gives the "Live long and prosper" sign with his hands.
Interesting.
You can see the inspirations of other, and the other one from 80 again, Denny O'Neil, Battleground OA, and this one's, you can sort of see the Jack Kirby inspiration on a lot of these comics from this time. The machine art. And it's kind of charming, this era. It reminds me of, if you're into anime and manga, Space Battleship Yamato, that kind of look. But, it opens with Hal is trapped inside the power battery on Oa by weaponers of Quad.
Correct.
Who are aiming to use it to control the energy supply in the galaxy. Just being douchebags, basically. And he manages to contact all of the Green Lantern Corps, lots of crazy-looking aliens who he's never met before. And, one's that giant space stingray. And they all fight this huge battle, which is quite fun in 1975 art, which I like it more than somehow. And then they're all captured in a tricky weapon, which is a swirling yellow space whirlwind. And Hal teams up with Sinestro to take them down.
Wow.
So there's a lot of fun in these 70s comics, but you get the feeling that they're doing this stuff out of Earth. It's not so much superheroes as they are kind of a science fiction police force, as you said.
Yeah, pretty much. And it wasn't until Geoff Johns came on, and we'll mention, I guess, a few of our recommended comics that you should read now, but Geoff Johns kind of tied it, all these kind of wacky, quite epic and ambitious concepts into something quite cohesive, and as I said, it started with his six-issue miniseries called Rebirth, which he wrote 2004-05, came out with art by Ethan Van Sciver, and there's actually a, if you look for it on the cover, you'll see Ryan Reynolds on the cover, and he actually writes the introduction to it, but basically, I'm thinking of No Fear, which is the Ryan Reynolds cover. Rebirth came before that. But basically, it's interesting because, you know, sometimes when new writers come on board, they have to deal with all these wacky concepts, like stuff that happened in the 50s, 60s, and they're like, how am I supposed to make this plausible? Like your Bizarro Superman or whatever, which John Byrne explained as like an evil clone. Geoff Johns basically explained that the weakness to yellow fear, which never really had an explanation in the Silver Age stories, was now the embodiment of Parallax. And then he said, how Jordan went mad and got the new costume, and when he killed everybody, when he was mad at Coast City dying, that wasn't Hal Jordan. That was the yellow entity called Parallax, which inhabited him and made the most of his weakened emotional state. So he explained it quite a good way. And even for most of, I don't know if the stories are new read, but Hal Jordan has white hair. Or white strips of hair, kind of like Reed Richards.
Maxwell Sheffield kind of streaks of white hair.
Like Mr. Fantastic does, the stretchy guy in Fantastic Four. And again, he said, you know when you get really scared, that's how your hair turns white. And that's what Geoff Johns explained away as well. So now he has a full masculine head of brown auburn hair.
Ah.
The colour of autumn.
So he must have only been kind of scared because it only turned a little bit of
correct.
His hair. Okay, yep.
It's an awesome series. Ethan Van Sciver is a fantastic artist. Rebirth, Green Lantern Rebirth is the one to pick up if you are not that familiar with the character. It's available in a trade paperback now. As I said, No Fear is the other one. That's the one with the Ryan Reynolds cover and introduction. Secret Origin is the one with the Ryan Reynolds cover, and that explains why Abin Sur died, who's the purple alien. And that's got by Ivan Reis, who's the current Green Lantern artist. No Fear, before that, explains the Manhunters, how's Origin a bit more, and Hector Hammond, who's the big guy with a throbbing forehead in the movie you might have seen. So those three books are pretty important ones to get. There's also the game out, Green Lantern, Rise of the Manhunters, and DC have kindly printed five movie prequels focused on how Sinestro, Abin Sur, and that kind of stuff tied into the movie continuity, and most of them are written by the screenwriters of the film. So if you go down the comic shop and if you want to know more about the characters of the movie, that's a good one. But yeah, I'd say Rebirth, No Fear, Secret Origin, and if you still want more, there's two volumes of Sinestro Corps out. I was reading this at work, and people were saying, well, there's a lot happening, isn't there? And epic. I mean, this is like comics on a Star Wars
Sounds
level.
Sounds a bit condescending of them, doesn't it, Chris?
Well, no, I mean, look at that.
It's really nice, Chris.
There's just pages and pages of weird coloured aliens fighting each other. And if they do a sequel, I don't know if they will, but if they do a sequel to the film, you'd imagine this is where it'd go. This is where the emotional spectrum and all the other different coloured cores first kind of start to appear. And Sinestro, the evil, gets a yellow costume and whatnot. But yeah, it's, again, awesome artwork, so pick that one up. And I guess, to tie things off, Green Lantern is getting some new series.
Okay.
Starting in September as part of this DC relaunch.
Yeah.
So Green Lantern number one ships in September. That's by Geoff Johns and art by Doug Monkey. Green Lantern Core One is written by Peter DeMarcy. And that's basically got Guy Garner, John Stewart doing their thing. Green Lantern New Guardians One has Kyle Rayner, the artist guy. And he's basically handpicked a team member from each of their multicolored cores. He's got a Blue Lantern and a Yellow Lantern, and Red Lantern's number one, which focuses on Atrocitus, the leader of the evil Red Lantern Corps. So all those new Green Lantern issues come out in September. But it's actually a really good time to be a Green Lantern fan. You may go to the movie and be disappointed by what you see. But I do want to say, stay after the credits.
Why?
After the film, because apparently, there's two things to look out for.
Tell me.
One is a ad from DC, which kind of has... it's like, if you want to catch more... I don't think it's even a movie. It's just like a JPEG whacked on the screen.
That's pretty cheap.
But it's basically, just catch up with Green Lantern Adventures on... And then it's got a list of all the, Rebirth, No Fear. Trade paybacks.
Yeah, that'll work after their terrible movie.
And it's also got, apparently, spoiler alert, I guess, but, if I don't tell you, then you may not stay behind. Sinestro finding a yellow power ring and putting it on and getting his yellow power suit. But, it may not mean much to people that don't read the comics. They might not get excited by it.
Yeah, well, if they even make a second film.
Yeah, I don't. I haven't heard how much money this has made. We know critically it hasn't been fantastic, but...
I'll be charting the numbers. I'm curious.
It's one of those
heroes no one's really sure if they've heard of.
Yeah, most people are familiar with him. Like you said, the John Stewart character in the Justice League cartoons. So that's a fair bit of exposure.
Well, not everyone watches the cartoons, though.
No.
Yeah, it's like if anyone likes a good laugh, The Onion did a good little video about hyping up the new Green Lantern movie.
Yeah, very sarcastic.
And I love the quote from Ryan Reynolds, the fake quote, but he was like, I've been a huge fan of Green Lantern ever since I heard that I was going to play him in this movie. It is a huge honor.
And there's also a funny parody.
And the newspaper reporter calls him Greg Lantern at the end.
There's also a funny parody tying into the Muppets movie where there's a poster as well with Kermit wearing a Green Lantern suit. So if you can check out those two fake trailers, parody trailers, please do. They're actually pretty funny. But Green Lantern is a great character, and we have Geoff Johns, who's just the last, since 2005, really, he's just been crafting it, the kind of epic that really only comics do well.
Right.
If you want something a bit more wild and wacky, I'd also recommend picking up Will World. Actually, I don't know if you have read Maladdin, but it's written by James DeMatteis with art by, sadly no longer with us, Seth Fisher.
Oh.
And it's got a young Hal Jordan basically having a mind trip for 96 pages. So that's actually just been released. It's been out for a few years, but it's just been released into one
nice,
easy one-shot format. And it's got great
looking.
It's got great artwork, and it's pretty trippy.
Lovely. Good.
Any other questions?
No.
There's so much to cover. I mean, well, there's 7,000 so Green Lanterns.
Yeah, like another, like how? Yeah, Hal Jordan's a bit of a milquetoast, I've got to say. The only cool thing I've seen him do, he's a bit boring, isn't he?
Well, I mean, he had sex with 13-year-olds.
Yeah. So, well, like, I was going to ask with the reboot. So, does that mean he's going to be Green Lantern again, or?
Yeah, he's in the Justice League. He's in the Justice League,
right,
as Hal Jordan, and as I mentioned, the other characters are still around. So, Green Lantern number one, Green Lantern Corps number one, Green Lantern Guardians number one, and Red Lantern's number one. So, not much is changing by the looks of things. And that's probably because Geoff Johns is like one of the head honchos of DC Comics now, so he wants Hal Jordan to. But I think, yeah, a lot of people, I think for periods, Hal Jordan was pretty boring and stayed, especially in the early years.
The coolest thing I've seen him do is steal Guy Gardner's girlfriend after everyone thinks Guy's dead. So Hal hits on his girlfriend, and then on their wedding day, like Hal's going to marry, Guy Gardner bursts in.
Wow.
It's so dramatic.
Very The Graduate. I mean, he is a hero, but, you know, he's a bit of a ladies' man, I guess. He's a hotshot test pilot. Ladies love that sort of thing, don't they?
Do they?
Sure, why not? What do we know?
Yeah. I've watched Airline, and they're not all good-looking dudes.
I've watched Come Fly With Me, and they're all dudes dressed as ugly women.
What?
That's the Little Britain
show. Okay.
Guys from Little Britain. Okay, so that's our Green Lantern special. Pick up a few of the comics that we recommended, and we'll be putting links on our site as always. We'll be doing something special for our upcoming 50th, but we don't know what.
You could say it's a secret surprise.
As opposed to a non-secret surprise? Well, a public surprise?
It's a secret to you and a surprise to us. No, we've got a pretty good handle of what we're doing, and hopefully it'll be something nice for all you people who've stuck around for 50 episodes. Or 52 will mark a year, so we're still weighing up whether to do 50 or 52.
I suppose 52 is the number of alternate universes in DC's world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think DC, just thinking of DC, they need a Stan Lee. Do you know what I mean? Like, they need a cool old man, crotchety old man, who go, we're rebooting everything.
That sounds like the Penguin.
Gotta fly.
Wrong umbrella. Thank you for listening. If you have any of your favourite Green Lantern characters or stories or questions that we have failed miserably to answer, please shoot us an email, chris@extrasequential.com. Please join our Facebook page as well, and there's always some lively discussions going on there, which is great to see.
Mm-hmm.
And next week, well, we've got to do a Swamp Thing discussion relatively soon.
Yeah, people need to know what's the deal with Swamp Thing, and I think with Swamp Thing number one coming out in September, we'll prime you well before then. You'll know what's the deal with that guy. And maybe we'll play some clips from the abandoned TV show.
Which has the best theme song ever.
All right, folks. Music for the show is purgeaudit.com. And Chris had some interesting articles over at Comic Book Jesus lately, I think. You should plug that more. It's a good site.
I'm not as full-on as I do, as I once was. But also Broken for a Tea. I've got an interesting interview with Tom Taylor, Australian playwright, who does Star Wars Invasion, and he was talking to me about The Deep, which is coming from Gestalt Comics, which you can order now and should. And also, I've just got an interview with David Zubart, who's who's the writer of Foster Broussard, which is an interesting kind of historical / supernatural drama set in the Gold Rush in California. So that's coming out from Red 5 Comics. So those are my two interviews up at BrokenFrontier.com now. Look forward to hearing from you, speaking at you next week.
You'll listen. All right, folks. See ya.
Stay green.